C2SP. Number 11B.
So this part in this chapter is really a wonderful part. It teaches us how we can get fooled. How we can really get fooled. Just by looking with the physical senses to a phenomenon and then conclude from the phenomenon if it's something divine or not divine, if it's something very wonderful, a wonder, a miracle or not. We are just fooled right and left. We need science against the physical sense testimony. We need science, and science says, go back to the cause and see what the cause is. She takes another example here in Love as Soul and takes the example of eloquence. Eloquence as a phenomenon, and says, where does eloquence come from? Well, those people who are not eloquent, they always marvel at people who are so eloquent. And they feel, well, they must be very much inspired, they must have a higher nature, they must have a good contact with God Almighty, who gives them that wonderful faculty and ability to be very eloquent, whereas we poor people have a lot of difficulty in talking and finding the right words and so on. So, are we going to be fooled or not? Now, she explains that, how we can find out if we are fooled or not. So eloquence re-echoes the strains of truth and love. So that's one way how eloquence can be proved or be demonstrated. If we are one with truth and love, then we may be very eloquent. Then the inspiration just may flow, and we go on and on in speaking and don't have to try to find words as I have to do in English. I always wish you could sit into a German class and see the difference. Yeah. So, she says, it is due to inspiration rather than to erudition. So she says, look here, in this case, eloquence is a form of inspiration because it comes from truth and love. It does not come from erudition, which would be a human effort. It would be an education in speaking, and therefore a human mind training. It shows the possibilities derived from the divine mind. Again, going back to the divine mind, it says, if we have the divine mind, then the words flow. Though it is said to be the gift whose endowment is obtained from books or received from the impulsion of departed spirit. So eloquence can also be a phenomenon that we can educate either through education, that is a gift whose endowment is obtained from books. If we read a lot, that educates us into the flow of words, and we get used to the words and to the renderings and the phraseology and so on. Or another way is, like the mediums, that they are very eloquent through the departed spirits. We always know that mediums are always very talkative and that their speech just flows and flows and flows because the departed spirits are giving them that eloquence. So we feel, if we are fooled, we feel that spirits are really a higher nature that can give us greater abilities and faculties like eloquence. When eloquence proceeds from the belief that the departed spirit is speaking, now she says this can be traced back to departed spirit, who can tell what the unaided medium is incapable of knowing or uttering? So we can say, well, if we don't have a spirit behind us that inspires us and that makes our tongue loose and gives us a flow of speech, well, this is much higher, that is much, gives much more capabilities, and we are not so incapable. This phenomenon only shows that the beliefs of mortal mind are loosed. Can you see? In a trance or mediumship, we lose the limitations of mortal mind. And that gives eloquence. So eloquence here is that we are free from boundaries, from the beliefs that we are not eloquent, from the beliefs that we are not educated, from the beliefs that we have not read enough books, and that we are born that way, that we cannot really speak, and so on. That can be just the limitation. But in a trance, those beliefs fall because we believe that not we are speaking, but that the spirit that is unlimited is speaking. And so we free ourselves as a medium from the limitation. Forgetting her ignorance in the belief that another mind is speaking through her, the devotee may become unwontedly eloquent. So she shows here, it is the counterfeit of the freedom of soul, it is the freedom of spirits, and letting go of the human limitations that makes us eloquent. Not us, that makes a medium eloquent. Having more faith in others than in herself, having more faith in the spirit than in herself, and believing that somebody else possesses her tongue and mind, like the spirits do, she talks freely. Yeah. So she compares here science, Christian science, versus spiritualism. Both can bring forth eloquence, but always on another basis. Now, which basis do we want? She still goes on with that eloquence and says, destroy her belief in outside aid and her eloquence disappears. So she doesn't have a natural sense of eloquence, but an aided sense of eloquence by an outside aid. Take that away, take the spirits away, take away the trance, and these people are no more so eloquent as they were in trance. The formal limits of her belief return. Can you see they return? Spiritualism always going back, is always a return, is always a relapse, it's a back for transformation. The moment you take the spirits away, they return to the older limits. She says, I'm incapable of words that glow, for I'm uneducated. Now the belief comes back to be uneducated. Therefore, the ability of eloquence disappeared. This familiar instance reaffirms the scriptural word concerning a man, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. So as we think in his heart, that identifies us, so we are. So you have that identity of thinking and the manifestation of that thinking. If we think in our heart that we are dominated by a spirit that is eloquent, and we are eloquent, if we are thinking in our heart that we are just an ordinary, uneducated mortal, then we don't seem to be eloquent. It's interesting that, that's a side note again, that Mrs. Eddy quotes this biblical verse about 3 or 4 times in the textbook, And only once she uses it in a positive way. Namely then, when she introduces in parentheses the term understandeth. She says, as a man thinketh, and then says, understandeth in his heart, so is he. So if that term understandeth is not in, then the whole sentence is lowered down to the mental state of things. because we can say to this sentence, this is not true. A man is a man as God knows him, and that cannot be changed. So no matter what we think in our heart, man is man. That would be the positive point. Huh? So man is never man, naturally, as an idea of God, is never what people think about him or what we think about ourselves. Never. My identity, my divine identity, is something very different than what I think about myself. So we have to be careful with these biblical renderings. As it is put here, it is in the right place. Then she wants to say, as a man thinketh, if he thinks, he is dominated by a spirit, so is he eloquent? If a man thinketh that he is uneducated, so is he? He's not eloquent. But that man, the term man, applies to the mortal, to the human man, and not to man as such. Because man as such is always how God knows him. So if one believes that he cannot be an orator without study or a superinduced condition, which would be a spirit, the body responds to this belief, the body responds to any belief, and the tongue grows mute, which before was eloquent. Showing again that there is no mystery about this point of eloquence. It is just a matter, where does it come from? And we can use various causes. We can use as a cause truth and love as inspiration. We can use as a cause for eloquence a spirit, and can be dominated by a spirit who knows no limits or not so many limits as the human mind. It can be the outcome of erudition, of scholarly attainment, and so there are various causes. Can you see constantly that question that you have to ask yourself when you hear about miracles, when you hear about wondrous things? Don't be impressed by it. They can be just worse than what we know. They can be just a phenomenon of a spiritualistic belief or of a mortal mind belief. It's not something that is really miraculous, and certainly not something that must be from God. So what is the answer to it really? And the next paragraph, so to say, gives the principled answer without using the term principle, but by using really the terms mind, spirit, soul, giving us the principle for this question. Namely, she starts out, mind is not necessarily dependent upon educational processes. It's interesting that she said not necessarily. She doesn't say not at all, because we know that educational processes can also be good, that they can be furthered through our unity with mind, by knowing that we are one with the all-intelligent mind, that naturally also gives us education, a right education. Is it the academic education of the right sort which is necessary? So we can help that education very much through mind, through oneness with mind. That's why it is so interesting that, say, the understanding of the system of Christian Science which we teach, which really demands something in the line of education, in the line of intelligence, in the line of true academic education, that is something that everyone can get, no matter what his scholarly attainments have been. We have seen over all those many decades that it is mostly those people who had not have a good education, say an academic education, just a, an average education, that they had no difficulty whatsoever to be able to understand clearly what we are teaching, and that is science, what we are teaching, its categories, its system, its matrices, and so on, all that have those many connotations with science, that no matter what human education they had, that they could grasp it. And we could see that many who have had a very good academic education with PhDs at the end of their name, that they never got it. That they were always standing in their own way. So it is not necessarily dependent on educational processes. And I like always to point that out, because I'm in that uneasy position, in that position that I have a PhD. And then students say, well, naturally, if one has had such a high education and have a doctorate degree, then naturally one can understand that he can understand the textbook. It's not dependent on that, not at all. And I want always to express that from time to time. After some years, I always stress that again, so that one doesn't have an awe from a academic education. It's nice to have an academic education, surely, but that is not necessarily a help for understanding the science of Christian Science. Anyway, I couldn't use anything from my whole university career or university training to understand Christian Science better. I don't think there is much in it. So, that mind, says, it possesses of itself all beauty and poetry and the power of expressing them. Then she goes from mind to spirit and says, Spirit God is heard when the senses are silent. So when the senses are silent, then I can hear spirit. This is not dependent on scholarly education. We are all capable of more than we do. Then comes a tone of soul in it, which says the influence or action of soul confers a freedom which explains the phenomena of improvisation and the fervor of untutored lips. And you see that untutored lips are not tutored through academic processes. It's educated or trained or cultured through through soul and confers the freedom. So everybody, no matter how many years he has spent on the school bench, so to say, and has gone to school, he can open his consciousness to soul and to the freedom of soul and not restrict himself, so that really that which has to be known spiritually and through spiritual understanding is open to everyone. No, a scholarly condition is necessary. It is sometimes a help, I would say, but very often a great obstacle. Very often. Or more often, a great obstacle. That's the principle here that was shown as mind, spirit, soul. Now we come to a tone of life, and it becomes a little bit more difficult here. Matter is neither intelligent nor creative. We know that. The tree is not the author of itself. You can see she touches now on the tone of life, what produces what. So matter is neither intelligent, therefore the tree is not the author of itself. Sound is not the originator of music, and man is not the father of man. A constant recurring of that sense, what originates what. Cain very naturally concluded that if life was in the body and man gave it, man had also the right to take it away. He was reasoning logically on a false basis, on a false assumption. But then on that false assumption, which he didn't know that it was false, he reasoned rightly, logically. if seed is necessary to produce wheat, can you see again the same thing? And wheat to produce flour, or if one animal can originate another, how then can we account for their primal origin? And now comes the great question. What is the primal origin? How were the loaves and fishes multiplied on the shores of Galilee? And that too without meal or monad from which loaf or fish could come? She leaves it as a question mark without answering it. Well, it's the really old question that has always been asked, what is first, the hen or the egg? And that question was never answered. What is first? Today it is answered. Today the Nobel Prize winner, Professor Eigen, he answered it and said, it's absolutely quite clear that it is the egg, not the hen, that originates. That is the first cause. That is the originator. Because only the egg can mutate. The hen cannot mutate. The egg is the so-called code. In the egg is the code and not in the hen. And so if the egg is decoded or is manipulated, then you change the outcome of it and you have another kind of a hen. And so today that first cause is seen as the genetic code. And we know that today there is a great difficulty that we are able to change the genetic code, that we can change it and bring about suddenly another species or another kind within the species. One calls it cloning, that is to change the genetic code. And now we come to truth. This is the question now. And here we read the following. Namely, the Earth's orbit and the imaginary line called the equator are not substance. She brings up a very interesting question and says, we always work with the assumption that there is an equator. That equator is actually only an image in mind. It is something that we figure out because it's a great help to map out the Earth. But that imaginary line called equator is not substance. It just exists in mind and is not something that exists as object. Though there is an equator. But it is not material, it doesn't exist as substance. Then it takes another example, the Earth's motion and position are sustained by mind alone. Now divest yourself of the thought that there can be substance in matter, and the movement and transition are possible for mortal mind will be found to be equally possible for the body. You see what she means? If we divest yourself of the thought that there can be substance in matter, then thought can take in all the movement and transition now possible to mortal mind. It has no limits. But the moment we think that it is dependent on the body, we think that then mortal mind can no more be moved. So she said, divest yourself of the thought that there can be substance in matter, that matter is substance, and see it only as what she said before, that it is only an imaginary line, that is only a thought product, a thought stuff, and not a matter stuff. Then you can do with your body what you can do with your mind. With our mind we can travel all around the earth. That we could do also with the body. We could travel around with the body if we would lose the belief that mind, that the body is substance. And that's why today you hear more and more about the outside body, what do you call astro traveling, huh? Or out of body traveling. We have some other terms in German, so that's why I had difficulty in knowing the English term. The out of body traveling becomes more an exercise that mentalists do, and they can do it, but it's a dangerous thing. The first time I heard about it was way back 30 years, a Dutch man who did that, and he had that out-of-body traveling, but once he was not careful and he couldn't go back to the body, so the body died. So it's a dangerous thing, but it's possible. It's only dependent on the belief that matter is not substance, that there is no substance in matter. That's the point. That matter is only an imaginary object or an imaginary form, an imaginary belief, and then out of body traveling would be possible. So people who are trained in that can do that and just can slip out of the body and travel far and wide and then come back and get into the body again. And this is not mysterious. We think this is funny, this is just humbug. It isn't. It is just spiritualism in the bluntest sense of the term. It's just always the very same thing, that because we believe that matter is substance, we can't do it. If you believe that matter is not substance, that matter is just thought stuff, then we could do it, because thought travels. You can easily travel with thought to the other end of the earth in a second, in a split second, but because we believe that thought, that body is material substance, we can't do it with the body. We can't travel with the body. He goes on and gives the final sense of it. Well, in dreams we fly to Europe and meet a far-off friend in dreams. The looker-on sees the body in bed, but the supposed inhabitant of that body carries it through the air and over the ocean. You have experienced that. You can easily do that in dream. This shows the possibilities of thought, because dreams are only thought stuff. So we can do it in the waking dream if we really would not believe that body is matter, but that body is only a form of thought. So opium and hashish eaters mentally travel far and work wonders, yet their bodies stay in one place. This shows what mortal mentality and knowledge are. It shows that mortal mentality is just dream stuff. And according to the dream we entertain, and according to the, if we entertain a spiritualistic dream, we can take the body away and travel with the body outside the body and can come back, because we believe this is possible. But that has nothing to do with Christian Science. Nothing at all. So even if it's something we can't do, we must not think that these people are endowed with a higher nature, with a divine nature. They are not, just on the contrary, they have cultured and refined mortal mind, and have taken on mortal mind beliefs that we really should lay down, namely that mind is in body and that we should lay down and not culture. That's the subject of the second part. Isn't it terrific? Yeah. Is it something you have been reading and not knowing what you have been reading up to now? Yes. Okay. So tomorrow we take the third part, which resolves quite a bit.